You want drugs in your cornflakes? The next speech is part of a presentation by GE Free BC, and it was given at the Vancouver Public Library on February the 5th, 2007.
And fourth on our panel is Herb Barbalat, who is at SFU as an associate with the Center for Sustainable Community Development. Widely known as a consultant on food issues, Mr. Barbalat sits on the Vancouver Food Policy Council and played a key role in the formation of that council. Mr. Barbalat was founder and past executive director of Farm Folk City Folk. He was an advisor to the federal government as a member of the exploratory committee of the Canadian Biotechnology Advisory Committee. You may hear him as a regular guest on CBC Almanac and in other media. Our last speaker is Herb Barbalat. He'll give us the big picture and discuss problems with government approaches to this issue.
Thank you, and thank you for coming and being active citizens. It's what we need. I've been asked to talk about the big picture issues regarding the approach of government, what I'm calling food is medicine and medicine is food. I'll comment on the implications for agriculture, geopolitics, environment, and economics. Then in the second hour, I'll talk about some other things, and then no, just kidding. As you're undoubtedly aware, the world is divided into two sorts of people, those that divide the world into two sorts and those who don't, right? For the benefit of those who do divide them into two sorts, I'm going to divide the scientific community into two types, those who believe that because it can be done, it should be done, and those who believe at least do no harm. It seems that most biotech industry is one of the damned of torpedoes and full speed ahead type school of thought. So at least do no harm is not part of their vocabulary. Since biotech and agriculture went public in the 1990s, the companies were indeed going full speed ahead and building up significant backlash as they went. Monsanto, as was stated, quit pharma crops in 2003. In 1999, a very worried biotech industry commissioned a massive study and the result of biotech in agriculture, and that report that was done is called the Sparks Report. The Sparks Report recommended at the time that there was so much backlash developing to agricultural biotechnology that the biotech companies should really back off agriculture entirely and get into pharmaceuticals and into medicine. And with the exception of Monsanto, that's basically what they did. And what the rationale for that was that if they made some successes, some breakthroughs in pharmaceuticals or in medicine, then the public would just fold. They would just collapse and accept biotech in everything, including in foods. Also in 1999, there was a conference organized by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada called the Second International Molecular Farming Conference. I can't find any further conferences that have been held, but it was a huge conference with keynote speakers, workshops, 81 sessions, 40 poster sessions. That was 8 years ago. And this field is neither new nor novel nor inconsequential. At that conference, one whole day was devoted to business opportunities and partnering events in molecular farming. The Ontario government sponsored it. The platinum sponsors, Novartis and Dow, along with dozens of other corporations, knew that they'd get their money's worth. What's the government's motivation in putting large amounts of money into this? My theory of it is that with the collapse of the resource economy and the resource industry and the collapse of the dot-com economy, governments are desperate to find another magic bullet to fill the void. They want large-scale solutions, multi- and transnational corporations, to create thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in profits so that they can help fund healthcare, highways, and all the rest. They will acknowledge that most jobs in Canada are created by small businesses, but small businesses are messy and they're hard to deal with by bureaucracies. And besides, they don't have the sex appeal that comes with $100 million corporate megaliths and the obscenely compensated CEOs that go with it. Meanwhile, not $1 million a year, but upwards of hundreds of million dollars a year are being invested by federal government, provincial governments, the BC government. The National Science and Engineering Research Council has given over $500 million per year in research grants and scholarships. Biotech is getting an ever-increasing share of these dollars. The Natural Science and Engineering Research Council is not the only one funding biotech, nanotech, and biofarming research. The National Research Council is actually the premier biotechnology research agency for the federal government and has six leading research centers, including the National Research Council Institute of Biodiagnostics, National Research Council Institute of Biological Sciences. No wonder Canada is second in the G7 countries, the top industrial countries in the world, in the number of biotech firms, third in revenues from biotech, first in research and development per employee. Canada's companies apply for more than 2,500 patents annually. The biotech sector includes transgenetic plants, molecular farming, biofuels, bioprocessing, industrial enzymes, vaccines, biodiagnostics, infectious diseases, genomics, prototechnics, bioinfo, nanobiotechnology, and on and on. Nearly every major pharmaceutical company in the world has a manufacturing or research and development operation in Canada. Why? Because tens and hundreds of millions of dollars are going into the pockets of universities and mega corporations. And it's going into these pockets with virtually no public accountability. And the reason that there's no public accountability is once it gets into the pockets of the universities and into the pockets of the biotech companies and the pharmaceutical companies, their studies then become CBIs, all the literature on Canada's website and like websites have CBI. That's confidential business information. So in order to maintain the integrity of the company's patents and all of their private information that's paid for by public dollars, they dedicate their information to, confidential business information. There's a revolving door between industry and government and the universities, and the same senior people rotate through universities, the public sector, and through government, through industry. And so all of the regulations, all of the good fellows well met is maintained. The passivity about this issue in the face of this is not appropriate. Outrage is. The mandate of Industry Canada's life science branch is to foster the growth of competitive life science industries in Canada. Canada does have a brilliant biotech industry, and they should be well supported to keep their experiments in labs where they belong and not in the fields, and only commercialize them when there's true value consensus and when it's clear that they're doing no harm. These conditions haven't yet been made. The Government of Canada will publicly state for all to hear that Canada has one of the safest, most effective regulatory systems for biotechnology products in the world. What they forget to say is what the Royal Society of Canada expert panel report on the future of biotechnology stated in their report. They too said the regulatory system was very good. But then they went on to make, as you mentioned, more than 50 recommendations on how it must be improved, and virtually none of these recommendations have been implemented. Canada does have an excellent regulatory system that could be better, and when better, could be a desirable product in and of itself that could be exported and sold. And it's the regulatory system, since it's claimed to be the best in the world, that could be the product that Canada is selling rather than the products from that that system. As an aside, one of the main arguments that government and industry use when defending bioengineering nanotechnology is that this is actually used by scientists. They're saying, well, the particles are so tiny that what effect could they possibly have? I've been in a debate with some scientists who said that. It was astonishing. They're using this argument with biofarming because they're saying the acreage that's used for biofarming is so tiny that it doesn't really require a lot of acreage and a lot of product, trillions of vaccines can be come from 1 hectare or 2.5 acres of land. So how could that be bad? They, of course, know the answer to that question. Another question is that why is most of the vital information about locations, plantings, and experiments considered to be CBI, or confidential business information? There's been court cases in the States, and the locations of these test sites in the United States now has to be public because of the courts. In Canada, it's still private information. The public good is definitely second to the right of business to keep information from the public. And the bigger the conglomerates, the more protection they appear to receive. Therefore, governments are in a conflict of interest position. They're in a conflict of interest position with themselves. They're promoting radical new technologies, at the same time carrying on a mandate to protect the public. More and more, scientists and university academics and scientists are also in conflict of interest positions because universities and government and industry are encouraging them to patent their research products and to commercialize them and go into public-private partnerships. And once they're commercializing, then secrecy, hyperbole, deceit creep into the ivory tower. The federal government states that Canadian values must be at the heart of public discussion on biotechnology. The questions to ask are what Canadian values, and when are those values expressed? When those values are expressed, what will the government do about them? Presumably, as in the case with labeling of genetically modified organisms, since only about 80% of the Canadian public want genetically modified foods to be labeled, and the government hasn't acted, then either an 80% consensus isn't enough to represent Canadian values, or it is good enough, but that discussion doesn't necessitate any action. So only 80% of us want labeling. We don't have labeling, but the government wants to consult with us to find out what we want. Both the Liberals and the Conservatives like to consult, but that should be taken not taken as a sign that they're going to listen anytime soon. And if they listen, God forbid that anything that they listen to offends the platinum and gold sponsors of the biotech conferences. Really, are these products needed is a basic question that never gets answered. One of the specific things that the regulatory process is not allowed to ask is, do we need these products that come out of the research and come out of the companies? They must, once the product is offered to them for regulation, they must look at it and they must not ask if it's needed. As several mentioned, these products, 95% are just to extend patent life. I won't go through that again. The newspapers, almost every day, usually on the front page, talk about breakthroughs, new pharmaceuticals that are coming on the market, these wonder drugs. They invariably say that tests on rats suggest that sometime in the future, there is a possibility that there may be some breakthroughs, and it may have potential impact on, I don't know, something or other. And that's front page news, and 5 or 10 years down the road, maybe something is going to come of it. And it makes you wonder why this gets front page coverage, and it makes you wonder who on the board of directors of the media outlets, who in the senior staff at the media outlets, who in the stockholders also have shares in pharmaceutical companies, and why isn't that information divulged? Why don't we know what the propaganda that we're receiving, what the vested interests are coming from, what the conflict of interests, as with government, as with the scientists, what about the media? If we were very cynical, we'd think that they all hold major shares in these companies, but we'll never know. When I spoke about the fact that there are small holdings that the tests are being done on, it's confidential business information, so we don't actually know very much about what it is. But we do know that most of the tests are on less than a hectare of land, and there are usually only 5 to 12 per province, so the test sites are very small. And they can be tested only on limited number of areas throughout the country. More and more, they're starting to use not only bacteria and viruses, but microscopic plants like mosses as these bioreactors in order to eliminate some of the containment processes. So what they're saying is that we don't actually need agriculture and we don't really need farming. We need pharmaceutical companies and these companies that will manufacture our food and our medicine. One of the natural consequences of this, and also of a parallel structure that's going on, the use of plants and edible plants for fuels, for ethanol. So now the two biggest areas in agriculture and farming, the two most lucrative areas, are the farming, PH, and the biofuels. And so farmers are being told, forget about producing food. Produce fuel or produce medicine, and you'll make much more money, and you'll be able to do it on smaller areas of land, and you don't have to worry about the marketplace, and you don't have to worry about as much about the weather, and you don't have to worry that the crops won't look good, and the consumers will see a carrot that's twisted, and they won't buy it, because we'll buy your product, because it's genetically engineered, and we don't have to worry about how it looks. This is about over a $30 billion industry already in Canada, and it's growing. Polis Institute did a study, and they said the three principal environmental risks were contamination of food and feed, the volunteer crops and gene flow, toxicity to wildlife and to insects. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency this year said, in 2006 and 2007, they're going to include performance indicators and targets, and they're going to measure performance of these companies and of their trials. This has been going on for more than 10 years, and now they're first decided that they're going to have these tests. This is what's happening with nanotechnology. This is what's happening with all the technologies. The regulatory system is at least 10 years behind the products. There are new products coming on the market all the time with not being regulated. In Europe, the genetic modifications, US and Canada have been beating up on the Europeans for a long time for resisting GMOs. The Europeans are beginning to waver, and this is seen as a sign for the biotech companies and for the pharmaceutical companies that the doors are about to open, so money is beginning to flow. So this whole area has the potential for doing wonderful things for drugs. It has the potential for doing wonderful things for the health of the planet, but we don't know very much about it at all, and we do know that the regulatory process isn't good. We do know that the discussions have not taken place with the public. So the recommendation is that we encourage these things to be done in labs. We ban them from being done in open fields and even contained or semi-contained fields. And we find out really what it is so that we do no harm. The last thing I want to tell you is when I was Googling biofarming, I Googled it without a PH, and what came up ironically at the top of the list was no-till agriculture. The purest form of farming, the best, healthiest for the earth and science. And this just juxtaposes what we could have in really pure, good agriculture if the kinds of hundreds of millions of dollars a year were being put into producing real food so that we would be healthy and we wouldn't need all these pharmaceuticals. Thank you.
This speech was part of a presentation called Drugs in Your Cornflakes at the Vancouver Public Library, February 5th, 2007. It was recorded by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. Visit our website at www.ecoshock.org and listen to our weekly program on CFRO Co-op Radio every Friday at 1 o'clock Pacific Time, also available on the web at www.cooperadio.org/listen.